Now, a complete breakdown of University of Tennessee athletics from former UT coach Doug Matthews. This is Big Orange Sunday, presented by Delta Dental, online at deltadentaltn.com.
Welcome into Big Orange Sunday this Memorial weekend. Today we're going to take a look at the final post-spring position group. That'll be the offensive line. We'll take a look at it just a little bit later. Alan Cockrell, will join us later in the show. Vol Baseball, is this team going to be in the postseason? Is that in the future for this team? We'll talk with Alan about that. I'll also revisit yesterday's show conversations. Had really two excellent conversations with Mike Keith on the 2019 Hall of Fame class. Be discussing that. A distinctive group and a lot of orange in there. And the American Football Coaches Association Executive Director Todd Berry was on the show with us yesterday. And we'll be talking about some of the issues that are facing upcoming and facing not only college football in general, but also the University of Tennessee football program. Lady Vols, by the way, if you happened to watch that game last night, I did, the end of it. They're 1-1 now with Florida. They play today for the College World Series, Softball World Series. Congratulations, Lady Vols. And again, we'll be discussing that, I'm sure, next week. But first, post-spring, pre-fall, volunteer football. Now, let's just kind of review what we've gone over. We've gone over the entire defense, talked about that. We've talked about the skill positions on offense. Just a quick review. This is a defensive football team that's going to be, in many instances, young as far as experience goes. There are several positions that really aren't tied in now, keyed in now. Certainly the defensive line, one of those. As Coach Pruitt mentioned, at the end of spring, at least four, or certainly four of, I say certainly, looks like there's going to be four young men who were not part of the team this spring because they weren't in school yet or injuries or whatever, had not been cleared yet, that will in all likelihood be big parts of this defensive line. Secondary, young, some good skill players there, some players that have done very well last year, but they're young. And a couple of positions at linebacker with health and other things right now, not real solidified. So on the defensive side, some uncertainty over there. Not so much on the offensive line. We're going to talk about that today. We mentioned the skill positions. A lot of veteran players there, particularly in the starting position. That's the quarterback, the tight end position, the running back, and the three wide receiver positions. If you just look at starters only, and those six positions, there's 23 years of experience in there. So a lot of experience. Again, as I mentioned last week, we can quibble a little bit about talent if you want to, what they've shown on the field yet, but they've all shown enough that they can be very productive players. When you get guys who know how to get them the football, I think we have that now. So that's kind of where we are going into today's show. Now let's talk about the offensive line. That is the big question mark in a lot of people's eyes, and I don't know that it is in the offensive staff, the offensive coordinator, the head coach, but certainly looking at it, and I'll just go back to what Coach Pruitt said post-spring, his post-spring comments when he was talking about the entire team, his post-spring comments to we, the fan base that's listening out there, and you can imagine what he said in his individual meetings with each individual player, the whole football team, but especially the offensive line. What did he say? And I think this is very telling. And then we're going to get into what this offensive line could be, what it has the opportunity to be. But his comments essentially, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, was this, is that I think he was disappointed in the development of the offensive line, felt like there was certainly enough talent there to be a good offensive line, but, and this is coming out of spring, not there yet. He challenged this offensive line in a way that he's a challenging football coach. I've watched him and listened to him coach on the field. I've heard his interaction with players, his staff also. He's a challenging coach. Those are the type that I like. Guys that coaches that challenge their assistant coaches, or if you're a coordinator, challenge your other members of the coaching staff on that side of the ball. And if you're a player, you want to be challenged. The best players that I coached and the best players that I watched others coach like to be challenged. Well, he's certainly challenged, and essentially, and again, I'm just kind of paraphrasing what I read into him saying. I don't think there's any question that he was saying this, is listen, we're not getting, you guys aren't giving us what all that you can give us individually and as a group. And if this team is going to be, this offensive team in particular, is going to be productive, which they can be, you're going to have to come back individually and be a lot better than you have been so far. Let's kind of take a look at this offensive line. As you look at it, it's puzzling to me, quite honestly, why we have not been better. And I can't tell you the reason for that. There's normally a couple of things in there. Talent. This is not the most talented offensive line that we've had, but it's a talented offensive line. It's a veteran group. If you look at the numbers of years that they've been there, it's an older group. It's a group that's played a lot of snaps, but they haven't performed anywhere near what I think a lot of people, including this coaching staff, and those are the ones that count, think they should. Let's just kind of take a look at it right now. Do you know next fall on this offensive line, we have 8 players who are over 300 pounds in the offensive line. We have many of those players are older players. We have Brandon Kennedy, who is a redshirt senior. Had some injuries, of course, we know. He's been around a long time, played at Alabama, played last year before he got injured at Tennessee. He's a redshirt senior. He's 6'3", 300 pounds. Now, I'm giving you the roster and what they look like. Maybe an inch or two off. They're not an inch or two off. Maybe a pound or two off. May have gained more weight, I would think, in this offseason. And then we have 4 redshirt juniors, and Nathan Niehaus, and Marcus Tatum, and Ryan Johnson, that 3 redshirt juniors that should be really, well, they're 300 pounders. And then when you put Jameer Johnson in there, he's also a redshirt junior. I don't know exactly what his weight is now. He's gained weight. He is closing in on 300 pounds. We have Trey Smith, who is a 337 pounder. Calvert is 330 pounds. We have a true sophomore in Jerome Carvin, who I think eventually is going to be an excellent deep offensive lineman. That's over 300 pounds, and Ollie Lane is over 300 pounds. So this is, we got plenty enough size here. Would you like to be bigger in some areas? Yes. But listen, there's not a whole lot of difference between a 300-pounder and a 320-pounder when you really look at it. When you go up against the defensive line we're going to be going up against, have to win against in this conference, they are smaller now. They're still big, but they are smaller now. Why? Because of the fast-paced offense, they have to be. So there's plenty of size. Again, I don't know that this is the most talented group. They haven't shown it so far, but they are certainly being challenged by this head football coach. A couple of things thinking on this. This is just from past experience in coaching and then watching, particularly the University of Tennessee. We've had a lot of really good linemen up there. Rarely is a freshman ready to come in and play at a championship level at Tennessee in the Southeastern Conference, really at any other school. You see a few of them every now and then. Trey Smith was one of those. Of course, his has been cut short his time by health issues. But normally in this league, and this is one of the things, again, that Coach Pruitt touched on, his words were, it's a developmental position. You have to develop to be an offensive lineman. It's hard for a 17 or 18-year-old youngster to come in and play against the defensive players that they have to play against in this league. So normally, it's redshirting. And quite honestly, I know Coach Fulmer felt like this when he was the offensive line coach, the offensive coordinator, the head coach. If you can get 24 ball games out of an offensive lineman, good ball games, you feel good about it. If you can get any more of that, it's a big plus. So what does that mean? That means that you want to redshirt those players, and then when they get to be maybe redshirt sophomores, but certainly redshirt juniors, you expect them to step in there and play at a high level. We have that now. We have a lot of experience on this team. And I can tell you this, there is a huge difference between a 22- and 23-year-old offensive lineman and a 18 or 19-year-old freshman who has not played off his line in strength, in confidence, not so much in ability at all, but just knowing how to play the position. So the challenge for this offensive staff is to get these experienced players good enough, competent enough, well coached enough, where they can be a good offensive line. Can it be a great offensive line? No. Can it be a good offensive line? I believe it can, but we got to see what Coach Pruitt was talking about. We got to see each of these individuals coming back in, having the want to be a good offensive line, and they should, because each and every one of these young men, believe me, have heard from people, probably everybody, including their mom and dad and their girlfriend, what's wrong with the offensive line. So we're going to see what's going to happen on that. If, and this is going to be kind of what I'll be looking at. If, and we got some, listen, I don't think there's any question that we got five freshman offensive linemen coming in that are big, that are physical, that have some of that nasty ability that we've been talking about, that are going to have the ability to play. However, and a couple of them in particular, I think Darnell Wright and Juana Morris in particular, Morris was there for spring, have the ability to play a lot in this offensive line. But, and this is the big but, as good as they are, and they are good, as talented as they are, and they're talented, they should not be able to beat out a fourth or a fifth year redshirt, a young man that's been redshirt, that's been in this program 4 or 5 years, that's played in this league. They should not be able to do that. I don't care how talented they are. It's different in a skill position. Offensive line, though, is so much more of physicality, knowing what you're doing, experience. So that's going to be what we're going to be looking at. That's the litmus test when this group of offensive linemen starts out. They're already back, but starts out this fall. Have they made enough individual improvement to be able to be an offensive line unit that they should be? A couple of things that just from going from last year and I saw. Part of the problem last year started at center when Brandon Johnson got hurt. Ryan Johnson is not a natural center. He's more of a guard or even a tackle. However, you got to play where you got to play. And then we never were ever in sync, it didn't look like to me, as a unit. Again, this is one of the things I learned from coaching with Phillip in the offensive line, watching him coach and being the running back coach. And, you know, you have to fit things together on that. We weren't in sync enough. We weren't stepping in the right direction. We're a zone blocking team. When you're a zone blocking team instead of a man blocking team, you got to have everybody stepping correctly, stepping in unison, and knowing what happens when a defensive front moves or blitzes or whatever. You got to be able to adjust those things. We had way too many times, and you all saw them just like we do. That's one of the beauties of replay in a college football game on TV. You get the opportunity to see where a block's been missed or whatever. And sometimes when it looked like maybe the center was missing a block, it might have been the backside guard who wasn't stepping correctly. Regardless, you have to have those five players, and of course throwing now the tight end in there in this offense, that are all working in unison. So that's what I'm going to be looking for on that. But then, again, I just want to go over a couple of things with this offensive line, and I'm going to put on some of the defensive line too. You know, we only have one senior on this team in the offensive line. That's Brandon Kennedy. That's it. Now, we got a lot of experience there, as I mentioned. We got size there that should be getting stronger as they get older, and with the workout that Coach Fitzgerald has them on. So we got numbers there, and we also have experience that's not senior experience. So this unit should get better and better. There's five freshmen, as I mentioned, coming in. I have no doubt that Coach Pruitt would love to be able, using the 4-game redshirt rule, to be able to redshirt at least 3, if not 4, of these guys. Now, they may have to play, and if they got to play, they got to play. But if any of these freshmen play significant minutes but early because of anything other than injuries to this offensive line, to me, if I was an offensive lineman, it would really bother me deep, because there's no way a freshman should be able to come in. I know I'm overemphasizing this, but that's how important it is. There's no way a freshman, regardless of his talent in the offensive line, should be able to come in and beat out a fourth-year junior. There's enough talent on this team. Again, we should be better there. All right. So that's kind of a look at the offensive line from that position. I want to hit a couple of things, Dave. We're kind of going to kind of circle back on these in future shows. But one of the things that I always did, and our staff always did, and I think this staff probably does, you take a look at those players. How many times have you heard me say this, that every year there are a group, usually a small group, but group of players who really have not done much in their careers at Tennessee yet? And I can go over, you've heard me talk about a bunch of them. Daryl Dickey was one of those youngsters. Chris White was one of those youngsters in the 80s. There's been others since then. But there's always that group of players who maybe they didn't mature quite as quickly, didn't pick things up quite as quickly, weren't quite ready to play. There's always those one or two or three or four, or sometimes a few more than that, that when they come back, all of a sudden, they're players. They got the confidence. They got whatever it is. Let me just kind of go over a list of players here. Almost all these guys have been redshirted, so they've been around the program. I'm going to keep harping on this too, because this is so important. One of the really smart things that Jeremy Pruitt did when he took over at Tennessee, and I don't know if it was just innately, it just the way he was, or if he really sat down and thought about it. You've heard me say this before. Too many coaches, when they come in, new coaching staff and the head football coach, they think they got to run some people off, get their own people in there. That's what happened when Lane Kiffin came in. We ran off about 12 or 15 players. As I said, some of them may deserve to be run off. But what you get is you get your numbers down. And when your numbers are down, then any injuries that you have, the practice time is affected by that. Coach Pruitt didn't do that. I think it's because of his experience coaching with several different places. There are probably some players that he would like to have dismissed, would like to have seen left, but again, knew that they needed to be there. And some of these players that he kept around, that he didn't run off, and he certainly could have, that he didn't dismiss for reasons of ability, he just wasn't sure yet. Some of those players are going to end up being, I think, really good players. Let me just kind of go through those. And these are names, maybe one of them, maybe two of them, maybe three. I bet you there's three or four of these players that I'm going to mention that haven't played any significant minutes other than special team and kicking game. I bet a couple of these are going to really show out and be very good players that really contribute a lot this year. Malik Greaves, one of those. He's a redshirt sophomore back at defensive back. Jordan Allen. A outside linebacker type, tall, rangy, can run, redshirt junior, came in last year. Jaquez Jones, a wide receiver, he's a redshirt sophomore. Notice a lot of these players have been redshirted. Maybe he can come in at wide receiver and provide. It's a pretty full position right now. Terrell Bailey, defensive back, brought in by this staff. They didn't redshirt him last year. Played on the kicking games. Maybe he can become a player this year. Solon Page, a redshirt sophomore linebacker, can run. Princeton Fan at running back. Going to be tough to fit in that position, but can he be somebody that becomes a really much better player this year? Cheyenne LaBruza at safety. We need help back there in depth, redshirt sophomore. Latrell Bumpus, he's been moved around from tight end to defensive end. He's a true junior now. Will he be one of those guys that the light kind of bulb kind of comes on, the clicks? Will he be one of those guys that can do that? You got Bennett and Butler, redshirt sophomore and junior, that are outside linebacker, defensive ends, kind of tweener type guys. They're not really big enough in the 290, 300 pound range to play in the defensive line. They're probably not quite quick or fast enough to be outside linebackers. They both played significant snaps over the last couple of years. Can they be those type of players? So that's just kind of a group. There's probably others, but as I look through and watched and have watched these young men practice, watched them somewhat have played, have watched them on tape, you know, this is a group of players that there's going to be one or two or three, a few of them that are really going to, I think, contribute this year. It happens every year. Then there's five players that really, of what I've put in questionable status for this upcoming season. Two, Aubrey Solomon, D'Angelo Gibbs, defensive line, and I think they're going to put Gibbs back at safety. I think they've looked him over at wide receiver. He may end up being a wide receiver at some point, but quite frankly, we have good players at wide receiver. We got more good players at wide receiver, and we got an experienced players we got at the safeties position. So, but those two young men, there's no doubt that after the early run of players that were granted waivers, transfers that were granted waivers by the NCAA, there's no doubt that after we saw some of those names around the country, that you had to feel pretty darn good about both these young men being eligible this year. Let me just kind of go back. They transferred, they were undergraduate transfers. By rule, they have to set out a year. But the waiver situation was put in a couple of years ago. There's been a lot of players, more that players than not, that have been granted that. I think for Aubrey Solomon in particular, he was at Michigan, been a little closer to home. He's from Georgia. They've probably felt really good about that. Not so much now, because the NCAA's kind of gone the other way. They granted, in their opinion, too many of these, so they've kind of gone the other way. So how this is all going to come about, I don't know. But those are two young men. If either or both of those are on this defensive team, we're a better defense, Aubrey Solomon in particular. And three young men who have shown lots of ability at Tennessee but have been hampered by the injury bug: Trey Smith, Darren Kirkland Jr., and Brandon Kennedy. If two or three or one, hopefully all of those young men are back to where they can play up to their physical talents. They're all three excellent, and I mean excellent, Southeastern Conference football players. Some may argue about Kirkland Jr. I'm not one of them. A healthy Darren Kirkland Jr. can play a lot of places, and he certainly can play on this defensive team. So there's five players that we're going to kind of be looking at. Brandon Kennedy appears, from everything that I've heard and seen, to be great. Trey Smith. Let me just hit Trey Smith. I've heard so many things out there that people have said, people have written, question marks on this thing. Let me just go tell you where Trey Smith was at the start of spring and during spring. Trey Smith worked out in the weight room and worked out from a conditioning standpoint, running things like that, 100%. He was cleared to do all those things. He wasn't held back on any of those things. The only thing Trey Smith was held back on was contact on the practice field. Maybe a few other little things, but I can tell you this. If you're cleared to run, if you're cleared to go through conditioning, and if you're cleared to do all of the strength work, which he was, I've been told by this staff that he was, then you're pretty much cleared to do whatever you want to do. The contact was the thing that I don't know that he was not allowed to do that. I haven't asked. They can't legally tell you that anyway. But bottom line is this: Trey Smith, as I mentioned earlier, Trey Smith, he's on this football team. If he wasn't on this football team, we wouldn't be talking about him. Has he been cleared medically to go out and have physical contact? I don't know, but my guess is, it's simply a guess, an opinion, I think he probably has. He's ready to do all these other things. But bottom line is this: if he can play, if Brandon Kennedy is healthy, which he looks like he is, if Darren Kirkland is 90% to what he is, these are three guys, and you add the two transfers in, five players that have talent and experience that could really help this football team. So we'll try to keep an eye on that. I'm kind of looking at the time here. I'm going to have this church segment done here in about a minute. But just kind of look. Here's what I want you to think about. We're going to be talking maybe about recruiting here just a little bit later. But let me just kind of hit real quickly what Coach Spruit has done. I think I mentioned this last week. He's signed in his first two classes 9 offensive linemen and 8 defensive linemen. That's 17 players. They're bigger, they're physical, particularly on the defensive line. We talk about that. Let me just hit some sizes and weights real quick on this defensive line that Coach Pruitt has recruited. Greg Emerson, 6'3", 310. He redshirted last year. Emmett Gooden, 6'3", 300. The only proven guy that I've seen up there, quite frankly. Garland is another redshirt freshman, 6'3", 300. Harris, Kingston Harris, redshirt freshman, 6'3", 310. Williams, we had come in this year. He will be in. Middleton will be in. Those are both 6'4", 6'5"-ish, right around 300, a little bit more. Elijah Simmons, a freshman that's coming in from here in Nashville. He's 6'2", 330. He weighed more than that in high school. Talented player. We've heard a lot about him. Then I mentioned Aubrey Solomon. So bottom line is this. The perception is one thing. None of these, few of these guys have proved it yet. But both the offense and defensive line are now have much clearer numbers and some experience in the offensive side, a lot of experience, some on the defensive side. They have the size to play in this league. And I think they're going to be, they're being and will be more so coached up where they can play in this league. So I'm not as pessimistic. I'm not pessimistic much anyway, most of you all know, as some. And I think this team can be a much better football team. Now, can they be good enough to win 8-9 ball games? I don't know, because a lot of that's going to be have to do who we play against. I will tell you this. I know that Missouri's not going to be as good as they were last year. They don't have that quarterback. Vanderbilt, from an offensive standpoint, quarterback's not going to be as good. Kentucky, we beat last year. They're not going to be as good. I don't think South Carolina, even though there's been a lot of talk from Muschamp on what they're going to be, I don't think they're going to be quite as good as they were last year. Just some things that we'll kind of see. We're going to be talking more and more about that. That's our church segment. Appreciate you ones that will be walking into church, which I know there's many of you out there that do that. You can listen to the rest of the show on podcast at CoachDougMatthews.com. As we go to break, I'm going to talk to you about American Home Design. You know, for a limited period of time, double bonus days at American Home Design. You can save up to $1,500, up to that amount. And included in that, you get 12 months same as cash. Bath and shower remodeling, save $500. Replacement windows, $100 off each window, plus, of course, 12 months, same as cash. Patio doors, entry doors, save up to $250. So you get the point. American Home Design, been there over 40 years. I've had all those things I just mentioned you redone in my home in the last 3 years. They're quality people that handle things the right way. AmericanHomeDesign.com. Check them out.
I don't know much about tires other than the fact that I need four of them to drive around. I do, however, know Bruce Rather at Tire World, and when my car needs tires and alignment, an oil change, or a problem diagnosed, Bruce gets a call from me. For 35-plus years, Tire World has been a staple in Rutherford County. They have locations in Murfreesboro, Smyrna, Laverne, and Chapel Hill. So for most any kind of tires at great prices, go see Bruce at Tire World, and look him up at tireworld.us.
Coffee-cured filet, ribeye, New York Strip, steak and biscuits, slow-roasted prime rib. At Stony River Steakhouse and Grill, we take dining seriously. Enjoy our daily selection of fresh seafood entrees and choose from our award-winning wine list with over 30 wines by the glass. Savor a culinary experience to remember at Stony River in two Nashville-area locations, West End Avenue and Galleria Boulevard in Franklin.
Stover's liquidation with the best hardwood deal ever. Shaw Golden Opportunity Oak Hardwood, first quality, 20-year warranty, seven great colors, three-quarter by two and a quarter, just $249 a square foot, and three-quarter by three and a quarter wide, just $259 a square foot. The same product sells for over $4 at the big box. Nobody stocks more plank-look porcelain tile than Stover's liquidation in Antioch, Cookeville, or Knoxville, or online at stoversliquidation.com. Check out our Facebook and Instagram, only specials, Stover's.
I love my community, and as a doting dad,
Daddy's home,
a devoted son,
there you are, Joe,
and a good neighbor,
hey man,
the people in my life are used to hearing my knock at the door, but as a law enforcement officer, I have to give news that people never expect. That's the one knock I always dread.
Booze it and lose it. A message from the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
What if I told you that 15 minutes on a new fitness technology called Mandu would produce the same strength and fitness results as 6 to 8 hours of lifting weights? EMS, or electrical muscle stimulation, has been popular for years in Europe, and after recent approval from the FDA, it's being offered to Middle Tennesseans. Mandu uses a small electrical current to tighten and strengthen your muscles as you perform a series of flexing and stretching moves. Get all the information on this new exciting technology at Mandu.com. MANDUU.com.
At home, at work, or in the car, Nashville's number one way to talk sports. The Sports Station, 104.5, The Zone. Detailed analysis of the orange and white. This is Big Orange Sunday, presented by Delta Dental.
Kind of closing out what I was talking about in the first segment, then we're going to get into a couple of other topics. I did want to mention this. This is true of any position on the field that is being coached. But there are three key things to every position. I think this offensive line even more so. I mentioned that without question, Coach Pruitt challenged these offensive line men. I've got to believe that he also challenged not only his offensive line coach, but new defensive coordinator, Jim Chaney, for this reason. Coach Pruitt's been around long enough to know this. If we don't get protection, if we don't get an offensive line that can knock people off the football, that can play as a unit, and that can protect the quarterback, he's going to be in for a long year. That's the challenge, and basically three things need to happen here. Coaching has got to be better. I'm not saying it wasn't good. But every year, you're challenged to do this at the level of the University of Tennessee. As I've said before, you don't have training wheels on when you get to Tennessee. If you do, you're an analyst or a grad assistant. If you're one of the 10 full-time coaches at a program like Tennessee, you better be a darn good football coach, because you're going to be coaching against some of the very, very best in the country. So coaching, offensive line, technique, and that comes from coaching and players, and communication. Didn't look like to me we were communicated enough. We had too many times last year. I don't like to go back to last year, but as we're talking about a new year coming up where, you know, our offensive linemen after a play were kind of looking at each other saying, well, I thought you were supposed to do that. So coaching's got to be better. Technique's got to be better. Communication's going to be better. And the last thing, and the thing that I know Coach Pruitt's harping on, the want to, for lack of a better term, has got to be better by every player that is associated, is on that offensive line. A couple of other topics I wanted to hit today. Yesterday's show, I don't know if you got a chance to hear it, but two people in particular. I had the executive director of the American Football Coach Association, Todd Berry, on there. Todd Berry was a grad assistant in the 80s at the University of Tennessee. Went on to be the head coach at the U.S. Military Academy, Illinois State, and I think, not in this particular order, Louisiana Monroe, University of Louisiana Monroe. He is now heads up the American Football Coaches Association. And he mentioned yesterday four issues that are facing, coming up, that are facing college football, and therefore we'll look at it from a perspective of facing the University of Tennessee Big Orange. Number one's gambling. It's legalized now in a lot of states. College football knows it's going to be there. They have been addressing this at all of their meetings and with their staffs. And the biggest question there is how to handle the injury reports. If you know anything about gambling, and I don't know a lot about it, but in the NFL, you have the injury reports. The reason the injury reports are put out by the NFL is so the gambling part of it, people who gamble, there's nothing being held back on that. Well, that's not so in college football. And exactly how coaches and athletic programs, football programs and athletic departments are supposed to handle this is a, well, it's something that's really being looked at, has been looked at, and really being looked at closely. Here's why. You can only go so far in what you can do in college that you can do in pros. Because of federal rules, federal law, HIPAA and others, you can't give out much information about the health of a student. Forget about an athlete, but a student, and certainly a student athlete. These athletes, these football players in this instance, are students. So you can't say they're they've got this illness or whatever. You're not allowed to do that. The other thing that coaches are really concerned about is, because we've seen this, you've heard me say this, I think anybody that follows athletics knows this, if there's even a hint of gambling in an athletic program and a coach has any knowledge of it, you're out of that profession in a collegiate part, probably pro part, period. So that's one of the things that's being faced. How do we handle it as coaches? How do we handle this athletic part? What's the policy going to be on this? Because it is coming, and it's coming this year. Secondly, I found this fascinating that Todd talked about yesterday. The ever-expanding support staff situation. Now, by rule, every NCAA football program are allowed to have one head coach, 10 assistants, and 4 grad assistants. That's 15 people that can coach on the practice field and in games. Let me reemphasize that. 15, one head, 10 assistants, 4 grad assistants that can coach on the practice field and games. Well, what we've seen over the last 10 years, last 5 years, really, it's really coming even stronger, are these support staff, analysts, and other things. He mentioned a number yesterday that he caught me off guard. The average number of support staff in college football now, NCAA college football, the Power Five conferences, remember, you're allowed 15 that can coach. In addition to that, the average is 42 people. I'm going to find out for you all what Tennessee's is. One school, though, the average is 42. So that means, obviously, there's fewer than that, and there's some more than that. There's one program, he did not tell me who it was, he couldn't tell me who it was, that has 107 support staff. That's not including the 15 coaches. 107. I got a pretty good idea who it is. But 107, think about that. This number is ever expanding. There's really no, they could have 200. You have 200 if you want to. That's something that's going to be addressed, and we're going to see it. I don't know how quickly, because it's kind of tough to go back on some of these things now, but found that interesting yesterday. The third issue that's being faced is the third parties. Not players, not coaches, but the third parties that get involved. 7-on-7, there's not much of that going on. One of the things that Todd mentioned yesterday was this, that, and I guess I knew this but hadn't thought about it, that in college football is the only college sport where high school coaches are still kept in the loop, important, involved in finding out and recruiting a young man. You think about it. Basketball has the AAU, the travel ball. Baseball, same thing. College football is the only one, really, that still coaches, when they go out and recruit, they go see the high school coach. They find out from that high school coach. They get tape from that high school coach. They find out about the on and the off field from that high school coach. That's not true in any other sport. And one of the goals of the American Football Coaches Association, remember, they not only represent college coaches, I think he said 18,000 members, but every pro, college, high school, middle school, employed coaches what I mean by that is that even though they represent youth coaches, if they're not full-time or if they're not paid coaches, the AFCA, they're not a member of the AFCA. So those are just some three things there. And then the fourth, real quickly, is this. Two new leagues, the XFL and Pacific, are going to take players. They'll be starting up. They'll take players directly out of high school. How are coaches going to handle that? So that's part of it right there. The other part, Mike Keith was on. Always like talking with Mike because, as we know here in Nashville and throughout the state, outstanding when it comes to talking and doing ball games for the Titans. But he's also a big, big Orange guy. Still keeps up a lot with Mike, with the Big Orange. So I talked with Mike yesterday. Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame is this Saturday, this June 15th, Saturday. And it has a distinctive orange flavor. We talked about those yesterday with Mike. How about these three headliners? When I started looking at this before I talked to Mike, just think about this. Are there three more representatives of the University of Tennessee on a national stage that are any more impressive or at any university than Peyton Manning and Charles Davis and Carol Lawson? We see them all over the place. Is there a school that has three better representatives? I don't know, but I know for my money, Peyton Manning, Charles Davis, Carol Lawson, there's others, but they're being inducted into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, and I don't think you could have any better representatives, both as players and people, and the way they articulate and the way they handle themselves. I have to imagine, I know this, if I was recruiting for the University of Tennessee in any sport, those three would be in a video or a book or something that I could talk about. Here's what the University of Tennessee produces. They take talented people, help them attain their goals, and all three of these people have been outstanding in giving back to the university in so many, many ways. So those are three of the inductees. Two more. David Cutcliffe, Kippy Brown. Now, Kippy is going in as a Memphis State Tiger. Kippy Brown, very proud of that, but also we know what the job that he did at the University of Tennessee in so many ways. And David Cutcliffe worked his way up he was one of those grad assistants back in the early 80s. Philip Fulmer brought him in from Banks High School. Worked his way up from a tight end coach to an assistant offensive line coach to a running back coach to a quarterback coach to a coordinator, head football coach now. So anyway, if you've got a table, if you've got a chair, great. There's a limited number, I think. They may be all gone. I don't know. But it's going to be a great night. That's June the 15th, 6 o'clock at the Omni Hotel. So those are two of the folks that we had also had on yesterday. All right, Alan Cochran is going to join us when we come back to break. I'll talk to you as we go to break about Double Dogs, family-oriented sports bar, two locations right here in Nashville. Hillsborough Village, I'm in there about once a week. Charlotte Pike, haven't been over there. That's a little bit further away, but over on the east side of Nashville. Or is it west side? Anyway, you know where it is. As I mentioned, it's a family-oriented sports bar. 30-plus TVs. You can see, go in there at any time and watch any sport you want to watch. All you got to do, if it's not on there, ask them to change it. Everything that a family sports bar is supposed to be, salads, burgers, sandwiches, pizza, five different signature mac and cheese dishes, classic appetizers, five different hot dog dishes. I'm not a big hot dog person, but you know what? A lot of people out there are. I am a milkshake person, and I can tell you from a lot of experience in this, Double Dog's famous milkshake, outstanding. Go online, check them all out at doubledogs.biz.
At Lazy Boy Furniture Gallery, you'll be blown away by the huge selection of Lazy Boy recliners in fabric and leather, but also by the sofas, sleep sofas, sectionals, and motion upholstery. And if you need help designing an entire room around Lazy Boy furniture, we've got a home design program, and we'll come to your house and put it all together free. I'm Mike Keith, encouraging you to check out any of the three area Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries, Cool Springs, Hendersonville, and now in Murfreesboro at Medical Center Parkway in front of Embassy Suites.
This is Doug Matthews.
And this is Dave McGinnis.
Did you know Medicare has a co-insurance and deductibles and doesn't cover prescription drugs?
And traditional Medicare doesn't provide dental or vision coverage.
Well, that's why I have my Medicare supplement and Part D plan through Farm Bureau Health Plans.
And why I bought their Dental Vision Silver Plan.
Farm Bureau Health Plans has been serving Tennesseans since 1947.
And because they're right here in Columbia, Tennessee, you've definitely got the home field advantage.
Farm Bureau Health has you covered at fbhealthplans.com.
Are you ready to start building your dream home? Make the process simpler with Wilson Bank and Trust, where construction loans are one of our specialties. We'll start with a competitive rate and terms that fit your needs. You'll work with a friendly, knowledgeable lender, and when the time comes, we'll make an easy transition to permanent financing when you move into your brand new home. It's easier to buy, build, or renovate with Wilson Bank and Trust in your corner. Come see us at offices all over Middle Tennessee or at wilsonbank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Looking for a place for a gathering? Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers are great for birthday and corporate parties, fundraising events, and all types of group activities and reunions. Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers offer bowling, games, food, drink, and entertainment for all ages. For more information, you can visit them online at strikeandspare.com or see them in any of their 5 Middle Tennessee or 3 Knoxville area locations. Plus, all locations have their own Facebook page and are open 7 days a week, including holidays. There's never a bad time for a good time at Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers.
Plumbing trouble? Has your HVAC stopped working? Let the expert team at Jewel Mechanical take a look at your heat, air, or plumbing. Trust us to do the work right the first time and to only sell you what you need. Let us help you make your home and family comfortable year-round. Ask about our money-saving HVAC and plumbing maintenance agreements. As always, free estimates with second opinion and financing available. Jewel Mechanical, 615-469-5965 or jewelmechanical.com.
Big Orange Sunday continues, presented by Delta Dental, online at deltadentaltn.com.
All right, let's get right to talking a little baseball. Alan Cockrell joins us. Alan, I watched a little of both games last night. Ole Miss, two in the bottom of the last, and three walks and a walked in it wasn't really an infield hit. Wasn't good enough to score, but long enough to score. But three walks and a walk off, kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, in tournament play, I think anything can happen, especially when you get that deep into the tournament. You know, you're running on fumes a little bit. Your pitching's running low, but Ole Miss is hanging in there, making a case to host a regional.
Yeah, big what, two-run homer last night. Of course, Vanderbilt after that. Let's just really quickly hit the SEC. We're going to get into Tennessee and what the future is for them potentially this year. But Vanderbilt, again, showing why they're, certainly one of the top two teams, if not the top team in the country. Excellent pitching and timely hitting. And they really, you've mentioned this all year long, they did it almost every way.
They do. They're probably... Well, in the SEC for sure, the most well-rounded club. They excel in the top three areas of the game of baseball, and they're cream of the crop in our league for sure.
Alan, I want to use them just for this reason, because I don't know all of the circumstances. I've heard a lot of different things the way that they built the program out there, but it kind of shows you a lot of Tennessee players that are really good baseball players. Middle Tennessee in particular, as you know, you've mentioned this to me before, a lot of outstanding coaches and talent in this area. What can Tennessee learn from Vanderbilt and how to build that program back up at Tennessee, which appears to be taking some pretty good strides this year?
Well, I think they have taken huge strides, and in all honesty, I think Tony has a pretty good formula for how he recruited just in his second year, his first full recruiting class coming into the program. he's gotten some big arms, and they brought in some starting pitching, a couple of bullpen arms. And then he hit the junior college route to make his team a little bit more competitive and a little bit more athletic with Solare and Martinez, their shortstop. And he got a middle-of-the-lineup bat. He got a shortstop who basically runs your defensive unit on the field. And everything runs through the shortstop. So I think he's done a good job, and I'm pretty certain he has a pretty good formula himself. It's just a matter of going out and getting the kids on campus.
You've talked about him a lot, and two programs that you mentioned a lot, Clemson. I think you mentioned yesterday three or four Southeastern Conference head coaches came out of Clemson. Arkansas is the other one. And the name of the game, certainly developing, but I think of all the sports, at least the men's sports, the most difficult it looks to me like to recruit to is baseball for a couple of reasons. Number one, of the big ones, that the top players are probably going to get drafted. Are they going to stay? Are they going to come? And the other part of it is several of other really good players. We saw this at the University of Oklahoma. They're multi-sport players. Are you going to allow a player? Some coaches do, some coaches don't, to be multi-sport players. You have told me privately, and you've also said on there, but you're really high on this coach and this coaching staff right now.
I am high on this coach and the coaching staff. Frank Anderson has done in just 1 year's time with the mindset of attacking hitters from a pitching standpoint. I think that completely turned the season around. Everything revolves around what you're able to do on the mound. The other thing that that I think has been really, really good is Tony realizes he realizes what you need in order to win, and you can go out and recruit good solid baseball players, but there's some key positions on the field that you don't win without, and shortstop is one, and catching is one, and Tony went out and got a top-notch defensive shortstop, and he got two kids that can catch and throw and handle your pitching staff. So I just think that things are going in the right direction. It'll be interesting to see what they can continue to do, continue to build off what they've accomplished this year. You know, but baseball is a little different too, Doug. You're dealing with $11.7 scholarships that have to be divided up among 25 players. That's no easy task. So I don't know. I think, in my opinion, I may be a little biased in this opinion, but I think that there's some changes that need to be made. I think an extra coach should have been allowed. It was voted down by a couple of different conferences, and I also think that there needs to be some scholarships added to if you want kids to come play college baseball and you want kids to pursue their education, then we need to do something about the scholarship number.
Of course, that has to coincide with equal numbers on the women's programs. Boy, I agree with you there. Two or three more scholarships in baseball and maybe some of the other sports, that you just double that. What's another 6-8 scholarships of these programs who are bringing in? Of course, this isn't every program, but bringing in $100 million plus. So maybe something we can discuss in the future. All right, Alan, you've kept up with this. You kept me informed on this. You talked to a lot of people. Tell us what you think the future of postseason play is for this fall baseball team.
I've talked with several different people, and I've gotten varying reports on where Tennessee is going to wind up in the regional.
You do believe they're going to be in a regional, though, right?
I think they're going to be a two seed, Doug. I think they're going to be a two seed wherever they go. But I've gotten three different reports. The early report was they were going to go to Raleigh, and they were going to play in the North Carolina State regional. North Carolina State faltered a little bit in the ACC tournament, so now they have supposedly dropped to a two seed, and it looks now that Chapel Hill is probably where Tennessee's going to go. Chapel Hill, and then the other one is Morgantown, West Virginia. West Virginia is playing in the Big 12 Conference Championship today against Oklahoma State. They've kind of overachieved to get to this point, but as of now, they're scheduled to be a potential host, and as is North Carolina and Chapel Hill. So, you know, we'll see where it all falls. But I definitely think Tennessee will not only get in, I think they'll be a two seed wherever they go.
Quick format on this, and we'll be talking about this with Al next week, not only on Big Orange Sunday, also the Saturday show. Quick format on regional play: best two out of three, right? And pitching staff is the thing that's the concern. They kind of walk us through a little bit about how head coaches look and managing that pitching staff during this period.
Well, actually, the regional tournament is the four team double elimination tournament format. If you win that regional, then the super regional is the best two out of three against heads up against another team. So in this regional tournament, you know, you would basically kind of manage it as you would a three game series in conference play. You know, you're going to try to match up again, and you know my thoughts on this. I'm not big on matching up my number one with another team's number one. But let's just say Tennessee winds up in the Chapel Hill regional. Tennessee would probably play Campbell, and I'm sure Campbell, who has won their conference, they've won the Big South tournament the last 2 years. I'm sure they have a big burly stud number one guy. Now against Campbell, I'd throw my number one. I would throw Stallings in game one, and I would back him up with Lingenfelter, and this is a possibility too. Garrett Crochet, who had a broken bone in his face or in his jaw off a line drive in the last series of the year, I've gotten some reports saying that he may be able to come back and pitch in this regional. It would be kind of a long shot, but I think that would just be an absolute huge boost for your ball club to have your number two guy come back and be able to help your team, you know, not only win a regional, but take them further and deeper into postseason play. I think that would be huge. But I'm running my number one out there. And then I'm probably going to say who I think my best matchup guy would be for UNC.
Alan, thanks so much. Talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
Alan Cockrell talking Vol baseball. As we go to break, our last break, mid-10 forward. Been with this program since you've heard me say it. We've been on the air 25-plus years on Big Orange Sunday in some form. They were our first sponsor. They still are a sponsor. Mid-10 Ford, the Boyd family. If you are a truck person, you most definitely are a Ford truck person, probably. If you're a Ford truck person, about Mid-10 Ford. Heavy trucks, light trucks, anything that you need, they got it. A service department that can work on anything, any automobile or truck. Collision center, paint up to 65 feet. If you got something bigger than that, go talk to them. Mid-10 Ford. Check them out online at mid10trucks.com.
Hi, this is Todd Tressler with Tressler & Associates, here to thank everyone who has made our firm a success. We've grown from focusing on real estate to a firm of 18 concentrating on almost every aspect of the law. With deep roots in Middle Tennessee, our firm is committed to securing peace of mind for residents of our area. Because we consider ourselves a family at Tressler, we are fully committed to you and your family no matter what life throws at you. When you need help, visit TresslerAssociates.com. Tressler & Associates, securing your peace of mind.
When it comes to home field advantage, the two words you need to know are Neyland Stadium. And when you're talking dental insurance advantage, the two words to know are Delta Dental. And no is sure to bring a smile to your face, as in no hassles, no surprises, no special ID cards required. Want to know more? Visit them online at DeltaDentalTN.com. Delta Dental of Tennessee. Dental made simple.
Mid-South Business Furnishers' move to 1830 Air Lane Drive, Suite 13 is complete. Come by and see them for some great excess inventory deals. Also, their quick full-line office supply and furniture products can be purchased online at MidSouthBusinessFurniture.com. 43 years now of design, furniture, and office sales, that assures you of complete satisfaction. Stop by 1830 Air Lane Drive, Suite 13, or go online at MidSouthBusinessFurniture.com.
Mid-South Business Furniture, Mid.
Big Orange Sunday continues, presented by Delta Dental, online at DeltaDentalTN.com.
I don't know if you were a worrier or not. You know, I think most coaches worry, at least have some concern. And I know in this fan base, there's always things to be concerned about. We have to worry about something, right? The one I've been hearing the most about is early recruiting, commitments. I keep up with that just a little bit, not much at all, and it's by design because, frankly, this time of year, even with the new early signing day in December,
This time of year, it's really somewhat of conjecture. Yes, you got people who have committed, but you have people that commit. Are they a solid commit? Are they not? I know this. 2020, the 2020 class in the state of Tennessee, I think is going to be a very, very good one, at least compared to other years. There's a lot of players in the state right now. I know Tennessee's all over them, and even will be working more hard. I don't worry a whole lot right now about commitments. Matter of fact, I don't even keep up with them. When someone commits, I usually get a phone call from somebody who's, hey, did you see where so-and-so? So anyway, I do know this. This is a really good recruiting staff. This is a staff that I think in the class and a half, and I'm just giving them a half a class for that first year, has done a real good job of rebuilding starting to rebuild the areas that needed to rebuild. As I've said many times, you can't do everything in 1 year. Tennessee needed, Coach Pruitt needed 40 scholarships that first year, but we're getting back closer. And the two key positions, offensive and defensive line, I went over those today, the numbers there. Only two seniors in that whole group, one on offense, one on defense. So anyway, if you want to worry about recruiting, more power to you. I don't. There could be some concern maybe later on. If there is, we'll talk about it. Listen, thanks to Ryan Albanese for producing, Alan Cockrell for, of course, bringing his expertise in baseball. Most importantly, you all for listening to the show. My father fought in World War II, and I think all of us appreciate the job and the effort and the commitment that everybody in the armed services gives this country. Let's think about that tomorrow. I'm going to be out on the lake. I hope you're having fun wherever you are, and I'll talk to you next Sunday on Big Orange Sunday.